Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Was putting my daughter down. I went to leave the room, yeah. And I thought she's all good. She's asleep. And then she went, yeah. "Daddy, where are you going?" I was like, "Oh no!"
Just as you get to the door, no, you're back where you started again, aren't you?
Yeah. And I was like, "Oh no!" Like this was at like 7:30. I thought, right, okay, this is going to take a miracle. So hopefully she stays asleep. But if not, well, it's my wife's problem now.
well, yeah, you're otherwise occupied, aren't you, for the next hour or so? So
exactly, you yeah. are my child right now.
Well, if you want to look at it that way, fair enough. You know, it's your. Am I your get out of jail free card? Is that it?
Yeah, I blame you for a lot, actually, Brian. You wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know. Yeah, it's a bit like blaming the dog, isn't it? When something goes wrong.
If my wife ever meets you, she's just gonna go. No, oh, it's him. Not you.
Yeah, not you. Yeah. Well, look, I have my uses, don't I? Let's be fair about this. You know, I'm always happy to perform a service for a friend. You know that. You know. But how have you been though, generally?
Yeah. No. Good. Very good. Actually, I had COVID last week, so got over that. It's my second go at it. So
I was going to say you've had it once already. You're being a bit greedy, you are, aren't you?
If anything, the sequel was just meh. Yeah, it didn't really do what the first one did. The first one had all the novelty and it was interesting. The second time, it was like, oh god, go away, would you?
Well,
we've got time for this.
Well, let's hope that's the last one. Let's hope there's not going to be any further repeats. We don't want you to turn into our Marvel franchise, do we? Hey?
Exactly.
But, you know, hump of the week, you know, it's Wednesday. You know, we're over that, the knobbly part of the week, I like to think. So, weren't the Oscars predictable, weren't they? They were utterly, utterly predictable.
Yeah, it was weird this year. I mean, I very rarely get much into it, and I didn't really this year either. But this year was one of the few years where I've actually seen some of the films beforehand. Because often what happens with the Oscars, I watched them afterwards, like the films that are coming out.
That's what most people do, isn't it?
Yeah, I was kind of like, oh, okay. They went with that one, right? Okay. But I was surprised that it did fall down so heavily with Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'd be surprised, actually, about what you think about that.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised really, because the way it was shaping up, I think they'd already made up their minds that this is our chance. I mean, I hate to sound cynical, you know, I prefer to say realistic, but it was shaping up that way. You know, they had numerous boxes to tick. You know, the pressure that the Academy have been under in recent years, with different things going on and pressure to comply and be politically correct and be very wokist. It's difficult not to be cynical in this environment. You know, by all means, recognize films for their quality. Now, I'm not saying that Everything Everywhere All at Once is not a bad film. It's okay, but it doesn't deserve that level of praise. You know, I mean, it's all a matter of opinion, isn't it, when all said and done? But, I mean, a film like Till, for example, that I was raving about on the last podcast, that's the type of film that if you wanted to reward diversity and inclusion, You could do it with that, you know, female director, black cast, about the civil rights movement. I mean, that ticks a few boxes, but it, in my opinion, it deserves the praise that it never got. You know, this is what I feel is so ironic, really, you know. But Brendan Fraser got the Oscar for best actor, though, which is quite right, I think.
Yeah, you sang his praises in the last episode. So, yeah I think the thing is, as we both chatted about last time, the film itself, Everything Everywhere All at Once, certainly it didn't. I've only seen it once. I still only have seen it once. And it didn't rattle me in any kind of way that I thought, oh my God, of course, this is an Oscar winner. It kind of was like, okay, this is a fairly interesting film, but that's about it. Like, whereas when I watched, to pick a non-white Hollywood film that did win something like Parasite, when I watched Parasite, I remember being particularly, you know, moved by that film, that it was, wow, that was something really special. Yeah. That was so interesting. It's interesting to see what
happens. There's something about it, though, Parasite, isn't there? It's something that kind of grabs you straight away, and that's what a good film should do, is make you curious and make you think, right, I can't take my eyes off of this. But, you know, we have to accept that the Academy will operate in a certain way and doesn't do what I feel is always logical. But as I say, you're just dealing with opinions. I mean, we've all got a view of the way things should be and what a great film is. But I think in some ways the Oscars are dumbing down. I mean, you look at any award ceremony, you might talk about the Golden Globe Awards, the BAFTAs, the Screen Actors Guild, right? And they're all kind of up there. But the real yardstick, the benchmark, the gold standard is the Oscars. You know, if you win an Oscar, you've got a license to work in Hollywood, haven't you? It's as simple as that. So that's a rare honour to bestow on anyone, I think, really. But, you know, it just doesn't seem to scan very well with me. You know, it just seems to be playing to the gallery a bit too much, you know, trying to play too safe. And it becomes too obvious as well.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, we will be talking about an Oscar winner in this episode.
And we will, yeah. That's right.
Our streaming pick for this.
Richly deserved as well.
Yeah, very good. But we'll get to that. But before we get to the streaming, it's cinema releases. Go for it, Brian.
Well, what should we go with first? Or are you going to let me choose?
Oh, I always let you choose this now. Do you know why? It's because, as I said earlier, I am completely unprepared, really, for this episode. So I'm going to use this time when you're actually going to be talking about these films to get all my sheets up and to get myself together.
So you're giving the game away there. You could have stayed quiet, couldn't you?
The slick operation that people think it is. It is largely me with a mic and a spreadsheet.
I mean, we could appear like a swan, couldn't we? You know, calm on the surface, but paddling away furiously below the surface. But you're prepared to let it all show, aren't you? That's okay. I am.
I also have control of post-production edit, so I can make myself look really organized there. It's fine.
Anyone could be a victim of your careful editing, couldn't they? Really? Let's be fair. All right, then. So let's start then, right? So we've got five films on general release. First one that I'd like to discuss is Women Talking. This stars Claire Foy, Jesse Buckley, and Frances McDormand. It's directed by Sarah Polley. The story is basically women living in a religious colony untouched by the 21st century, where the men brutalize and rape their women at will until they decide to do something about it. They take a vote. Three choices. One, they leave. Two, they do nothing. Three, they stay and fight. Now, I don't think it's given too much of the plot away to say that they dismiss, do nothing. It's either going to be leave or stay and fight. They're split down the middle. And the film is basically a record of their discussions over the course of an evening or an entire night, really, where they decide what they do. And Ben Whishaw is the only man in the cast. He plays the teacher, the honest broker, the neutral, who records their discussions. Now, I think the trailers on this film don't do it any justice. If you look at the trailers for this film, it looks very dry. It looks very slow. not very pacey at all. But it's not though. You know, it's a kind of film you almost listen to it rather than watch it, because the characters are fairly static. They don't move around very much. All the action takes place within a barn, within this community. And the fact that they don't move around much doesn't seem to affect it, because the plot still rolls along at a reasonably good pace. I think it's a very good film. It's very intelligent. Not an easy one to get to grips with, and quite disturbing in places. But it's a film that has its reward if you stick with it. But it's the antithesis of so many films that we see in the cinema, because, you know, it's a thinking film. It's a talking film. It's not about action, but a very, very good film and worth having a look at.
Well, what a cast. I mean, I must say, I'm a big fan of Jesse Buckley and all of them, really. But I think when you do get these films that come to the big screen that aren't playing up to, you know, keeping our attention, you know, really giving us lots and lots of visuals, sometimes that's a really nice option. I remember seeing The King's Speech, and that's quite a heavy kind of dialogue film and lots of intimate scenes, and seeing it in an immersive experience was actually really powerful, because I feel when you do have something that's, say, more visual, that can still kind of work at home. You can kind of still do that. But if you have something that is trying to just captivate you largely with dialogue and a script, that, yeah, a cinema is a very good place to put that, because you're almost like a fly on the wall. You feel more like a fly on the wall, I think, in that sort of arena.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're kind of in an enclosed environment. You're in darkness. You know, it's like all the pre-show trailers that you see where they urge you to switch your mobile off.
Yeah.
Watch this screen. Don't watch any other screen. And it's all very true. You know, they want you to appreciate the cinematic experience. And to see a film like that on a big screen is unusual. People might look at a film like Women Talking and think, I'll wait for that on streaming. But I would urge you, if it's the type of film that you feel you could warm to, is to go along and see it in a cinema. Because all films are better on a big screen. But it has a certain amount of novelty value, because it is a thoughtful film, it's a thinking film, and it is about domestic abuse. So it's dealing with a very current topical subject, and it always will be. And it's an issue that we're trying to get to grips with as a society. So it's got that going for it as well. You know, women will watch it and relate to it, and so will men as well. But it's well worth the look, and it will surprise you. I think it will surprise you if you sit down and watch it. But, I mean, it requires something different from you as a viewer.
Okay. Well, there we go. Women Talking. An Oscar winner for Best Adapted Screenplay. So, worth anyone's time. What's next, Brian?
What's next? Right. Let's go with What's Love Got to Do with It? Now, this is nothing to do with the Tina Turner film or the Tina Turner song. This is a film starring Lily James, Shehzad Latif and Emma Thompson, directed by Shakur Kapoor, and a screenplay by Jemima Khan, no less. Now, story, pretty much a straightforward rom-com with a slight twist. Lily James plays Zoe, a filmmaker who's grown up living next door to her best friend Kaz, played by Shehzad Latif. Coming from a traditional Pakistani family, Kaz has succumbed to an arranged marriage, or assisted marriage as they call it now. Zoe decides to film Kaz's wedding in Pakistan. The party flies off and the fun and games begin. Now, I think this is a lovely rom-com. It's almost a date night movie, I think. Lots of nice visuals. A very good script by Jemima Khan. You know, she's not the person you would expect to come up with a script for a romantic comedy, but she's drawn on her own experiences being married to Imran Khan, the Pakistani cricketer. And it makes some interesting points about, I mean, we've seen films about Eastern and Western cultures clashing, but this is trying to set the concept of an arranged marriage alongside the Western conventions of spontaneous relationships developing. And that juxtaposition between the two is quite interesting. But nevertheless, it's still a good film. If you like rom-coms, I stress that. If you're a fan of rom-coms, you will enjoy it. It's quite predictable, to be fair. But that's the way we like our rom-coms. We like them to be predictable. We like happy endings. And I'm pleased to report there is a happy ending here. But you get 10 minutes into the film, you'll know what the ending's going to be. But, you know, I personally don't mind that, because you get something specific from a rom-com. You get a few laughs. You get some good storytelling. You get to warm to people that are very likable, usually. Even the ones that are not quite so pleasantly drawn, you end up liking them as well. It's a feel-good movie, isn't it? It's a heartwarmer. It's all those cliches that we as film critics use. You can attach all of these to What's Love Got to Do with It. But a very good film and well worth seeing.
Okay, sounds great. I mean, do love Lily James. She's been in a lot of great movies for me. Like, and when it comes to rom-coms, I mean, this is saying it coming from the, you know, producers of Bridget Jones's Diary, Love Actually, yep. Those sort of places. That's right up my street. That really is.
Mine too. Yeah.
And I think there's, you know, a big place in, especially British cinema, I think, for these types of films where, you know, they are a bit kind of easygoing, and you know, they're playing around with a lot of these sort of tropes, and I think this is the sort of film, again, goes back to the idea of like the sort of film you're going to watch in a cinema. You're going on a date, you've got the opportunity to watch something like this, or you've got, you know, something like Women Talking. That's variety. There's different types of movies.
Yeah, of course it is.
Think that's a great great selection that we've got going on this month in cinemas.
That's right. You have got a contrast there. And they're both excellent films in different ways. And I think it's asking for a different reaction from us as viewers. I think with What's Love Got to Do with It, you're looking for nice characters, an engaging storyline, and some laughs, a witty sort of banter and dialogue. And there's lots of that going on here. And I must say, if this is anything to go by, I'm really impressed with Jemima Khan as a scriptwriter. This is just the screenplay that she's done. But it's, you know, she's drawing on her own experiences. But I mean, it's not easy to write a script like that. That's got all those elements, all those ingredients fed into it, and makes you care about the characters, and gives you a few laughs to have sort of clever lines that stick in your head. You know, it does all of that. And it does the job for me. And I think it's that out of those first two films, it's probably the film that will run for longer on general release. You know, I always look at the listings, local cinema listings. And for a film like Women Talking, you might only get 3 or 4 listings in one day. Right? For a film like What's Love Got to Do with It, you might get 6 or 7. But if you compare it to something like Shazam or Ant-Man, there'll be 15 or 16 slots that you could choose from. And it does give you an idea of what the public responds to. I would hope that a film like Women Talking or What's Love Got to Do with It will get more than just 3 or 4 slots a day, because that's a sign that people have got an open mind and they'll see different types of film. You know, one of the things that I hope we can do with Film Club is to open people's minds a bit more, and that there are other types of films out there that are worth seeing.
Absolutely. And Brian brings me on to a good point. So if this is your first episode of Film Club, then nice to have you here. Where have you been? Answers on a postcard, please. what we want to know is your opinions of these films. So we actually have had someone send in a review of All Quiet on the Western Front, which we're going to review in a bit. But yeah, any of the films that we talk about, Women Talking, What's Love Got to Do with It, a lot more coming up on the show, we'd want your reviews too. Now, whether that's you want to send us an audio actual recording of you, which there is now a button, Brian, on the website. Wow. I've created a button.
Oh, wow. You created a button. Nice one.
Stuck it right on the homepage. Can't miss it.
We've really arrived now, haven't we? We've
got our own buttons. I mean, that took me a good hour or two to sort that out with a cup of tea.
Did it really? Yeah. Is it that technical?
No, I'm just really slow, and I had the office on in the background. I was just not exactly rushing. Right. But yeah, if you want to send in your reviews, or if you want to tweet them, you can tweet them to @UKFilmReview, or however you want to send them to us. Yeah. Maybe you don't want your voice read out, so I'm happy to read them for you. Or, you know, feel free to send in any other method. Other than, like, you know, those kind of barbaric methods of, like, carrier pigeons. I was always worried about the pigeons. Were they all right with that? Was that okay? I don't know.
They didn't have a lot of say in it. I couldn't answer back, could they, really?
Little extra message typed, you know, taped to the bottom. Help me.
Yeah, I know. if only they could read and write, it could have been different, couldn't it?
It was their own fault, really.
That's what evolution does, isn't it?
And that brings us very nicely on to what's next, Brian.
What's next, Chris? What's next is Creed 3.
Oh.
Yeah, Creed 3, I couldn't resist it. I thought, yeah, I'm normally quite adverse to films with Roman numerals in the title, but it is Creed. You know, it's an offshoot of Rocky, so I thought, got to do this. Starring Michael B. Jordan and Jonathan Majors. Also directed by Michael B. Jordan as well.
Is it his first? Is that his first film?
It's his first film as director.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think it is actually. It may well be his debut. I think he's been dabbling, hasn't he? He's one of these sort of actors that dabbles as a writer and a director. I think it's his first directorial venture.
According to IMDb, it is, so that is gospel.
Excellent, we can confirm that then. So this is the latest installment of the Adonis Creed franchise. So the story is pretty much Creed is retired and living a comfortable life as a media celebrity, has his own gym, is advertising, living a nice, comfortable life with a nice family. But then a figure from his childhood re-enters his life. Damian Anderson, played by Jonathan Majors, shares a secret with Creed, which becomes clear as the film wears on. But in double quick time, Damian Anderson becomes world heavyweight champion and starts to bait Creed, starts to diss him. And you think, well, we know what's coming, don't we? Really? We know what's going to come next. So Creed comes out of retirement and fights Damian Anderson. So he's fighting not only Anderson, but he's fighting his personal demons as well. It's that kind of film, really. You know what you're getting. We know that if you're being really brutally honest about this, it's a bit like Rocky 9 or Rocky 8, only without Rocky in. And that's really weird as well. There's no mention of Rocky Balboa in this film. Not that I could see. He'd been airbrushed. Apparently, there were issues between Stallone and the producers on this film. He thought the character was going in the wrong direction. And if you remember, Rocky Balboa was in the first two Creed movies. Bearing in mind the influence that he had on Creed, just to suddenly airbrush him out is a bit odd. But anyway, you get over that. It's a very entertaining film. For entirely different reasons when compared to the first two films that we've looked at, because it's action-based. The storyline is fairly linear, straightforward. It doesn't challenge you much. It's a storyline that we've seen many, many times before, particularly in boxing movies as well. It's not so far removed from Rocky. So, you know, taking all that on board, it's thoroughly entertaining, and it's a good way to spend a couple of hours. The visuals are great. The fight sequences are incredible. I mean, in the review that I wrote, I actually had to say that neither one of them looked like a proper heavyweight. They looked like cruiserweights. They look so light to me. And also, no boxer could possibly have hands that quick and feet that quick. You know, so the credibility side of things, I would question, but entertainment-wise, you can't go wrong with this. You know what you're getting. Does what it says on the tin. It's the old cliche.
I mean, boxing films are, you know, genre upon themselves. Oh, and yeah. You know, what's your favourite boxing film, Brian?
Oh, I think Raging Bull.
I was going to say Raging Bull. Yeah, yeah. You can't go wrong with that, right?
No, I know. Well, look, it's De Niro. It's Scorsese. It's in black and white. I love films in black and white. With Raging Bull, what's interesting about that film? It's a boxing movie. Naturally, but you only get 22 minutes of boxing in 2.5 hours. And all right, fair enough, you're telling a story about a person, but to feature so little boxing, maybe that's what makes it good though, because it's sparing, I think. Another really good boxing movie, going back even further in time, you know, Raging Bull was 1980. We go back to the late 50s. Paul Newman made a film called Somebody Up There Likes Me about Rocky Marciano. Rocky Graziano, I beg your pardon. Rocky Graziano, the middleweight. Very good film in black and white. So there are some very good boxing movies. And whilst I wouldn't put Creed and the Creed franchise with Raging Bull or somebody up there likes me, it does the job. It's very glossy. You know, I think it lacks probably the rawness of what boxing is really about. There's a kind of a shine on Creed. There was a shine on the Rocky movies after the first Rocky movie, in my opinion. But, you know, the purists could look at it and pick it apart. But, you know, you take it for what it is. It's good entertainment.
There you go. Creed 3. Your reviews, do send them in. Or if you want to send us your favourite boxing film, do that too. Yeah, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about boxing movies a lot more. There's a lot we could talk about here. But...
Did I do the sports episode with you on the podcast?
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
because I remember thinking about that. I was like, oh my goodness, like the fighting and boxing in general could have, you know, it's well its own show, because trying to fit all the different sports in was just so hard. So
yeah, it was difficult. Yeah, maybe we should do one just for boxing. There's certainly plenty to choose from.
Yeah. All right. Well, what's next, Brian? Come on.
What's next? Cocaine Bear. Cocaine Bear. Right. Okay. Starring Ray Liotta in his final film role, and Kerry Russell, directed by Elizabeth Banks, and based very loosely on a true story of an American black bear that ingested 75 pounds of lost cocaine. Honestly, it's preposterous. Off its head, it's totally nuts. But is it entertaining? Hell yeah. Hell yeah. You know, the visuals are just incredible. The animatronics do their job pretty well. I think they do use a real bear at times, but even though it's slated as comic horror or comedy horror, it's actually very funny in places. Very funny. And it's got a great soundtrack as well. It's got a great 80s soundtrack. It's got one of my favourite hip-hop records, White Lines, Don't Do It, by Grandmaster Flash and Money Mel. So it's kind of got all that going for it. I think with this film, you need to suspend your disbelief. Even though we know it's based on facts, on the big screen, they exaggerate, don't they? You know, I think the real bear that was involved was kind of a bit more like a teddy bear. But the bear we see on screen is 700 pounds and 8 foot tall, or it seems like it anyway. But having said that, God, it's a white knuckle ride. It really sends you on a ride. And there are some great scenes, particularly where two paramedics are trying to escape from this bear and they've got somebody injured in the back of the vehicle. God, it's exhilarating. You cannot take your eyes off it. I think it's unfortunate that it was Ray Liotta's last film. It's not the way I would prefer to remember him, because after all, he did make Goodfellas. And that makes him a bona fide legend. Anyone who was in that film is. And he made other good films too, but that's the film I'd like to remember him for. And I think in some ways it's sad that it was his last movie. But I just hope he got paid loads of money for doing it. He got spoilt rotten and he enjoyed himself. That's all I can say about that. But I sense there will be a sequel here, because the end of the film left the door wide open, left a gaping opening for Cocaine Bear 2. Well, I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. I've not read that there's going to be a sequel, but the door's wide open. I don't know where else they could go with it, but it's hugely entertaining, quite scary in places. You know, I think it's only a 15. Having said that, though, I mean, the ratings for films now, I think, are almost irrelevant, the way people can access movies these days. But I think there'll be a sequel, because the ending left the door open for it. And I'm not sure how I feel. You know what I think of sequels in general. I mean, we've just been talking about a sequel, but you can't get away from them, can you, Chris, really?
No, you got the built-in audience. You know, you got that bankable viewership there. So sequels are like that. With this, though, I was surprised you said that might happen, because it feels like very much a thing of itself. Like, you know, it's like an event, right, that it was based on a real story.
Yeah.
So I'd say who's in this, though, just in the cast list, is Brooklyn Prince, she's a young actress, and she was in a really good film called The Florida Project.
Right, I've not seen that actually.
Really recommend that. Yeah. And yeah, she plays one of the main characters in that film, Sean Baker film. And I saw that at a film festival years ago, and I remember thinking about her in that, thinking, wow, she's really good.
She was good in this film as well.
Oh, was she? Because I wasn't sure. You never know with kid stars, because sometimes maybe it's just a character that happens to reflect their personality that it just sort of works. But it's good to see that she's still doing stuff, because, that's a really good film.
I think child actors need to survive growing up, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, they could be absolutely brilliant and real prodigies as children, but they need to get through that phase of growing up. And, you know, when they become an adult, one, are they still interested in acting? And two, have they matured? Have they developed sufficiently to carry on acting? And I think there's another podcast in that, Chris, looking at child actors and how they grow up and what they go on to do. You know, some child actors just give it up altogether. But she was very good at it, very good, very sort of natural and believable reactions. You know, it doesn't go too much to the side of comedy, because there are funny moments, generally funny moments, there are. But nevertheless, they were suitably concerned by a black bear out of its head on cocaine, as you would be in a wood, in a forest, particularly if you choose to climb up a tree. But I'm giving away more of the plot here, so maybe I'll stop here.
Well,
yeah, good fun though.
Our friends at the Phantom Zone have also reviewed Cocaine Bear on their episode recently, so do go check that out. Yeah, if you've seen it, loved it, hated it, wasn't sure about it, send in your review. Send it to us.
Yeah,
we got another one, Brian, or was that?
We got one more.
One more,
The Middleman.
Oh, yeah.
This is a bit of class, really, I think. Starring Paul Sverhagen, I hope I pronounced that right, and Paul Gross, directed by Bent Hamer. This is really what I would call a love letter to the Coen brothers. You know, it wears its influences on its sleeve. You can see that. Nothing wrong with that at all, but it's pretty much in the Coen brothers' ballpark, David Lynch. It's a story of a guy called Frank Farrelly, played by Paul Sverhagen, who becomes the middleman. This small, anonymous American town needs someone to deliver bad news. So they start interviewing, as you do. And you have the pastor and the local councilman and the police officer, played by Paul Gross, interviewing Frank. He gets the job and he goes about his business of delivering bad news. Reading it out like that, describing it in that way, I hope I've made it interesting enough. It doesn't sound particularly gripping when I read it, when I just describe it, but it's just totally riveting once you start watching it and you start picking up where the influences are with the Coen brothers as well, particularly with Blood Simple. But very, very good film, very sort of likable characters that you buy into. They're fundamentally decent, but their experiences in life lead them down a certain path. You know, they're kind of characters with wasted talent. They're people's lives haven't gone anywhere, and they're still waiting for their lives to go somewhere, but they're still living in this town. They're still living in an enclosed community where too many people know too much about each other. But it's the film with real character, but the greatest character out of the five that we've reviewed, and they're all really good, and they're all worth seeing, but this, for me, I love the kind of that, picking up on that kind of Coen Brothers approach, the David Lynch approach. I love that. I think it's great. And more of that, please. I do like it.
So that was The Middleman. I do believe it will be in cinemas. It should already be in cinemas.
I think it is now, yeah.
Yeah, we got a screen there, didn't you? So I was just checking it was coming up. Obviously, yeah, you mentioned the Coen Brothers connection there. What's your favourite Coen Brothers film, Brian?
Oh, Fargo, I think.
Ooh,
I'd have to go with Fargo.
Yeah, Fargo is up there for me. Yeah, it was between that and Inside Llewellyn Davis, actually. I really like Inside Llewellyn Davis. I thought it's such a good film.
Yeah, yeah. There are so many to choose from, aren't they, really? Mm. And very influential filmmakers as well. Blood Simple is really good. That was one of their early ones. I like that. There are just so many there. And I mean, they're not just, I mean, producers and directors and writers, but they do write on, they do go off on a, on different sort of jollies, don't they, as well?
Yeah.
Which I think is good. But yeah, loved the film. What did you think?
I've not seen it.
Have you not seen it?
Yeah, no. The screener that we got, there were some issues with it, and the link they sent was only for you, so I wasn't able to sort of watch it. So I thought, do you know what? I'll wait till Brian tells me whether I should watch it. And then you gave it 4 stars, and I thought, oh, I should have watched that. I'll try and get hold of it.
Watch it when you can, because it is that kind of film. It draws you in. It doesn't have, you know, this is where it's really kind of picked up on what the Coen brothers do, because it doesn't try too hard. It doesn't kind of have to make too much of an effort. It sets it all out, gives you the story, and you buy into the characters, you buy into the story, even though there doesn't appear to be a lot of substance there. You think, right, he delivers bad news, so if there's an accident somewhere, he has to tell the bereaved relatives what's happened. So he's doing...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The town sheriff's dirty work for them. And as I say, I hope I've given it enough life for people to be curious about it. You know, that's the important thing. But as I say, you can take an ordinary topic and make it something special. So I think it's very good. Very, very good. And yeah, I love the Coen brothers. They're just the kind of filmmakers that you do buy into. There's something about them. It's got a certain je ne sais quoi, as they say.
Yeah. There you go.
Hudsucker Proxy is the film I was trying to think of by the Coen brothers. That was with Paul Newman as well. So yeah, I think Fargo is the one that stands out for me the most.
It's very memorable, and it's very, like, I've always got a warm feeling about that film, even though it's set in such a cold place. It's a really sort of warm film to me, just in terms of the feelings of the characters. The way that they were presented was just so great. And the show was good, actually. The TV show was pretty good.
Yeah, it was. It was, actually, yeah. I'm just looking through some of the films of the Coen brothers. You know, they made some great films. Barton Fink. Oh, I love that film. The Big Lebowski. Jeff Daniels. Oh, I love that film as well. We'll have to do one on the Coen brothers, won't we, Chris?
Have we not already? I feel like we would have done that. Maybe we didn't.
Maybe I wasn't on it.
It's not worth listening to them. No, I'm kidding. Do listen to it. But yeah, no, definitely. I mean, they've just got an amazing filmography. It's just incredible. And there is still a few I haven't actually seen. I still need to...
They've got quite a high work rate, haven't they, really? They, you know, they're not kind of one film every 5 years. They do knock them out at a reasonable rate.
Yeah, and the
quality doesn't suffer, does it? Either.
Speaking of quality not suffering, we're moving on to our streaming pick for the month.
Oh, yeah.
And before we get started, we have a review from a listener, Lindsay Attenborough. I'm going to attempt to play this through my phone, through the mic, but I probably upload it properly for the edit. But for Brian, apologies if you can't hear this.
I was privileged to be invited by Netflix to the screening and Q&A at the Hamyard Hotel, and I would give the event 5 stars in addition to the film, as it was one of the most in-depth and honest panels I had ever had the fortune to be in the audience of. The film itself is unique in giving you a deep insight into the fatality of war and the hardship for a soldier during the First World War. Leslie Patterson, one of the screenwriters, is an athlete, and I think she really understood the suffering and tenaciousness required for survival. This was a noticeable theme in the film. I haven't read the book, but there is always something incredible about an adaptation, although for some to have read the book ruins the film and vice versa. For me, the depth of the universe created by an author creates a rich landscape for a film that always captivates my imagination. You really feel immersed in the lives of Felix and Albert. The cinematography really draws you in with epic wide shots that it would be a shame not to see on the big screen. So I would advise those who have not seen it yet to go and see it at the cinema rather than watching it at home.
There you go, Brian.
Excellent. Very good review.
Thank you, Lindsay, for sending that in. And also thank you for your message, which was keep up the good work. So that is much appreciated. Lindsay's obviously done our job for us, so we can move on.
I gotta say, we can forget it. What's next?
I think obviously, it was an Oscar winner for what was the Oscar one?
Best foreign language film.
And some others as well. It is absolutely epic. Brian, give us a little bit extra in terms of what it's about and how you felt about it.
I think it is the definition of an epic movie, isn't it? There's a certain amount of novelty value about any war movie that tells the story from the German perspective. Usually, we get a war movie, it's told from the Allied perspective. And it does have that novelty value, that it tells a story through German eyes. And it helps you appreciate that, you know, the loss that we all feel from war is felt on all sides. That everyone suffers. The people suffer at the hands of majors and generals and politicians. And it does away with that kind of concept of sort of borders and trenches. They're just people. They're just human beings. And this, as Lindsay pointed out in her review, based on a book, you've got that dilemma of do you read the book before the film or vice versa, or do you do one or the other? You always lose something when you see a story portrayed on screen. But this doesn't disappoint. It's an amazing piece of filmmaking. Absolutely incredible. It really is. When I was watching it, I found myself comparing it to 1917.
Yeah, me too.
And I almost feel in some ways it's got the edge on it. As good as 1917 is, as good as Sam Mendes is at directing a movie like that, this kind of takes it one stage further. The opening frames of that film, this film, really, obviously not going to give too much of it away for people that haven't seen it, but the opening frames of this movie really sum up what war's all about. How futile war is, how pointless it is. And you feel nothing but empathy. You don't have any sense of sides and right and wrong. They're just people. They're just people. Like this guy, Felix, is just another guy trying to get through the day, just trying to live another day and survive. And that's what you get from it, that it portrays the human cost of war. And it's the only, what surprises me, I thought there'd been many more remakes than this of All Quiet on the Western Front. The first film version was in 1930. And there was a TV movie in the late 70s starring Martin Thomas. But this is technically the first big screen remake of All Quiet on the Western Front, which surprised me. But it's amazing. And if you can get to see it on a big screen, definitely go and see it. Because then you see the full... I was going to say beauty. Beauty is probably not the right word, but you see the brutality of war. It's so effectively portrayed. It's amazing.
I find sometimes when when we're given war films, there's always this question as to why now? You know, why are we watching this depiction and this story from that war or this war? And again, don't want to give much away, but I think it's important that we do raise the point from this film, which is the futility of it and the fact that so many lives were lost over trying to gain a bit of ground, just a bit of ground. And it's a parallel, obviously, for what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. The idea of someone encroaching on a bit of land and or fighting over a piece of land, and you just think, and there's like, for every minute or every 10 minutes that this battle carries on, thousands and thousands of people are dying. It was just at very point, once I made that connection, I was like, oh, okay, that's why I'm watching this right now. That's why I'm watching this in 2023. Yeah. And it's done in with a way that was up there with, like, Saving Private Ryan, you know, in terms of visuals and the scale of it. But it also had so much heart, much like 1917, there's so much heart to it. And the bit that I absolutely loved was the bit where they get the stolen goose. You know, they go and steal the goose and they're eating it. And it reminded me of the scene in Shawshank Redemption where they're having the beers on top of the roof.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's this little bit of comfort and almost freedom from all the rubbishness around them.
Yeah.
And it was things like that which obviously the film needed. But yeah, by God, is it bleak at other times. Other times there's bits where you just think, yeah, no, I can't watch another person, you know, go through tragedy.
I know,
but
I
it
know.
Just is relentless. It is absolutely relentless and harrowing throughout, but absolutely spectacular at the same time.
I think really there was no war. If you look back right back through history, there was no war quite like the First World War. And they knew what they were doing when they said it was the Great War, because it was the Great War insofar that any sense of logic just disappeared. Why dig into trenches like that? Why sacrifice thousands of men just to gain a few yards? That form of warfare, of tactics, has never been tried before or since. What on earth possessed them to say, right, we're going to dig in, we're going to just go over the top, force of numbers, that's the way to win a battle? And I think when you're talking about war and the true meaning of war and the human cost of war, we will always come back to the Great War, the First World War. That's the common reference point, how senseless and brutal it all is. I mean, the Second World War is bad enough, but you sense that's where it's got to rest on the Great War, because all sense of logic and humanity disappeared. You know, and there was fought on all sides as well. You know, you realise that there is right and wrong. There's fought on all sides, but at the end of the day, war is war. But yeah, you're right. There is a resonance even now because of what's happening in the Ukraine. I mean, how many years have we had since the end of the Second World War that hasn't featured a war of some description, a local war of some description? So it's still relevant, you know, about why we make war. But amazing film. It's bleak, it's depressing, but sometimes you need to watch these things.
And yeah, that's all part of it. I think it depends on what you're in the mood for. And you made the recommendation for this, actually. This was your choice, I think, for this month.
Yeah.
And I thought, great, I'm going to make time for this. I'm going to sit and watch it. And when it started, I was like, am I in the right mood for this? And I was like, yep, do you know what I am? And I watched it in two parts. Know me, can't get through it, but two is not bad for me. And even so, though, coming back to it the next day, even though it's bleak, I wasn't like, oh God, right, I've got to go and sit through this now. It was, I can't wait to get back there, because it is just so compelling and it is so gripping. And you want to just be with these characters, even though they're going through hell, literal hell. It's like, and then the bit with the flamethrowers, gosh, it was just, I'm not going to go into it because I think it'll just bum everyone out. But
yeah, but I mean, the thing is, you root for them. What I look for in any film is whether the characters are likable or they're horrible or they're nasty or they're vicious, they're sadistic, you know. You can give a character some redeeming features, and in some way, whether they're good guys or bad guys, or indifferent guys, you know, in the middle, you still find yourself rooting for one or the other. You know, And that's a sign of great filmmaking. And you root for these characters. You want them to survive. You want them to get through the day. You want something positive to happen to them. Or you want some kind of resolution. They're making you care about the characters. And it is bleak. It's depressing. But, you know, we're surrounded by war. You know, you pick up a newspaper. You turn on the news. You know, you hear details of some form of conflict somewhere. So it's not like you can really escape it. It's just telling you what's already out there.
And this is out there on Netflix. Mm. So no excuses for anyone not to watch it, unless you don't have Netflix. Although I think it is also in a couple of cinemas. So, hey, look
out.
It
is still around in some.
So, All Quiet on the Western Front. Mm. We're moving now to our indie picks. I'm not sure how indie this film was, but it certainly was off anyone's radar. Thank you to Rich Johnston on Twitter for suggesting this to me. It's on Amazon. It's called The Show, and it's directed by Mitch Jenkins. Now, we're moving genres quite rapidly here from, you know, a foreign language war film to a more modern fantasy mystery. Very bizarre film. Did you get a chance to watch The Show?
No, I haven't actually. I haven't had a chance to see that.
So this will be for me then. So it's written by Alan Moore and directed by Mitch Jenkins. You've got this character who is a very shady character called Fletcher. And he's turned up in a town trying to look for this stolen artifact. It's like a necklace. And the person that he thinks it's on is then winds up dead, found dead, but the piece is missing. So he then spends his time trying to find and locate this mysterious piece. He's being hired by someone from London to do this, and he comes across various oddball characters and unusual situations. And in a world kind of, sort of haunted town, basically, is what it's referred to as, where you've got these strange things going on everywhere. It's an absolutely bizarre watch. It really is. It's incredibly eclectic. You've got things all over the place. Shout out to, you know, the cast and crew here, because they are fantastic. Really does a lot with so many characters. Tom Burke plays the lead character.
I like
Fletcher.
Tom Burke. Tom Burke's good. Yeah,
he's excellent. He's so good. And yeah, it had that kind of feeling. We watched a couple of films similar to this in the festival last year where everything was not quite right. It had like a nightmarish feel to it. Everyone's not necessarily who they say they are, and there'll be sort of odd comments, and you always feel uneasy. You're always feeling like something is odd going on in this town. And as he uncovers more and more, it gets weirder and weirder. It's just a very intriguing, interesting film, very different to the sort of movies that you might pick up. And I found it very hard to find. I must say, it was kind of absolutely buried in Amazon, because you try and search for a film called The Show and you don't get the film you want.
Yeah, the search facility is not great, is it, at times? It does take you a while, particularly where you've got the alphabetical matrix and you're trying to sort of navigate your way around it. And they're not easy to find.
The way to find it is put in the director's name, Mitch Jenkins. That's how I found it. Yeah, but that's obviously if you know who directed it. So, it's actually on Freevee, so you kind of have to watch it with ads. But I believe that means you don't need an Amazon Prime subscription, so anyone can watch it. You just watch it with ads. I found it very interesting. Really well-filmed. Lots of dark and odd and strange bits. There's a particularly brilliant bit where, this is a bit of a spoiler, so apologies Brian, you're gonna just hear it, but anyone else, skip a minute. But he's talking to this woman who he ends up kind of working on the case with, and she says, "You're a hitman," and he goes, "We prefer exit technician."
Well, like that.
It was an absolute brilliant line.
When I find it, I think I will like this. It's got something about it, isn't it? It's something odd and bizarre and strange about it.
And I would say, yeah, again, much like all the films we've discussed, you've got to be in the right mood. You know, it's coming at you from complete left field. And if you're not on board with the bizarreness of it, then you're probably not going to enjoy it. It doesn't have a great overall rating on IMDb. It's got 5.7. I think that's harsh. I think this is a good, solid 4-star film, therefore an 8. But to each their own. And I do think when it comes to things where you're doing, say, dark comedy, which this is, even though it's other genres as well, dark comedy is often quite alienating, I think. I don't think everyone's cup of tea is dark comedy, so...
Let's be absolutely honest about this. I think all films are mood type films. You have to be in the mood for a certain type of film. You know, we've just been talking about All Quiet on the Western Front. You have to be in a certain frame of mind to watch a film like that. Same thing with a rom-com, same thing with an action movie. You've got to be in that frame of mind. And this film is a heavily mood-based film, isn't it? You've got to be, you know, it could be the type of film that I'd come home on a Friday night after having a few beers. Oh yeah, I'll watch that. You know, that
is a good time to watch it, actually.
Yeah, that's probably the opportunity I would take to watch a film like this, if I could find it.
If you can find it. You've got to remember the director's name, everyone. Mitch Jenkins, or search for Tom Burke or anything like that. So yeah, you can find it. Or go to IMDb, and if you do put in the show on IMDb, it's a bit easier to find because they have a link to it, because it's owned by Amazon anyway, IMDb.
Oh, right, okay.
They have a link to the freebie bit where you can watch it. So there's no excuses, really. Everyone should watch it, and let us know what you think. That was the show. We have another indie pick, and this is a short film called Souls. Did you watch this one, Brian?
No, afraid not.
You're dissing all the indie films this month. Yeah, like, you didn't care. You're too busy hanging out with Lily James.
I wish.
I see what you're like. Now, this is written by Dan Gage and directed by him, who has written, and we've reviewed a few of Gage's films on the site. But it's an interesting piece. It's available on UK Film Channel. So if you type in ukfilmchannel.co.uk and search for Souls in the site, you'll find it. It's free to watch. You don't need any kind of subscription because he's put it on Vimeo, I think it is, and it's embedded into the website. And it basically is, there's this character on this cliff or like a mountain peak, and he's gone up there to scatter someone's ashes. And when he does that, there's someone there, sat there, sort of having a picnic.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so he's got this person, one person sort of sitting there, one person's about to jump off the edge. And they have this awkward kind of standoff where they're sort of looking at each other. And Paul Barber and Paul Kazar, I think is how you pronounce it, are the two actors. And it's got, again, similar to the film before, but it's got that sort of quintessential unusualness that you sort of think, this is a very strange situation and well worth making a film about. And Hannah Sayer reviewed it years ago on our website, and back in 2018, so it's a bit of an older film. And it's got LGBTQ plus kind of connections and vibes, and it's only 8 minutes, so it's not really a long bit of your
month. Just got settled down, haven't you? Got your popcorn or your burger to hand, and it's all over.
It even has a 30-second trailer, which always makes me laugh when you've got these short films, but they've also got trailers. It's like, gosh, how much less can we have? But yeah, it's just an interesting watch. I just found it, it looked great. That's what I always enjoy when you do watch a short film, because sometimes they're made on like incredibly small budgets and you're like, oh, okay, the quality's already off. But actually with Souls, it wasn't. It was a really good quality, great location, this use of this mountain peak. And yeah, I don't think there's any dialogue. It's all non-verbal, like kind of just looks and gestures and things. And yeah, really powerful stuff.
Language barriers then as well. You know, exactly. If there's no dialogue, then no language barriers. It can work across all frontiers, all countries. You know, I think if you can make a film within that short time frame, and you can do away with dialogue and still tell a story, or make a story complete enough for you to gain a view, an idea of what's going on, then that's quite a skill.
There you go. So yeah, check it out if you can. Go to UK Film Channel. There's a link there, and you'll be able to find it. and let us know what you thought, because it's only 8 minutes and it's free, so you've actually got no excuse. Everyone,
I know.
Even you, Brian.
Even me, yeah, even I know. You. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Right, now, this next film, we're heading back into our nostalgia pick, and now I know you've seen this because you picked it, and I hadn't seen it. Would you believe? I had not seen this.
I was going to say I'm amazed, but in some ways, you know, there are so many films out there that get, not buried, but they just get forgotten, overlooked, particularly where the actors that are involved, directors that are involved, move on to bigger things. You know, I think this is an example of a hidden gem.
Absolutely. And weirdly enough, like you say, I'm obviously surprised I've not seen it, because my parents had it on VHS. It was there for the watching. I just never watched it. It wasn't 18, to be fair. So yeah. I wouldn't necessarily have watched that when I grew up. I did watch 18s, but... and we should probably let everyone know what the film is called.
Primal Fear.
Primal Fear, Richard Gere. That sounds like Cockney rhyming slang.
It does
it?
A bit, doesn't it? Yeah, I should know all about that, shouldn't I? Maybe there's something subliminal going on at the back of my head. You know, it's Cockney rhyming slang. But what I like about this film, really, is that it's a courtroom drama anyway. So you've got an inbuilt tension that's there anyway. That I love. I like Richard Gere. I think he's got that kind of arrogance and cockiness, but likability all rolled into one. I think there are very few actors that can be arrogant and likable at the same time. I always believe you can either be one or the other. You can be arrogant or likable, but you can do both. And Richard Gere seems to gravitate towards characters that are like that, whether he makes them that way or whether they're written for him that way, I don't know, but he always seems to have that kind of mix, that balance. And Laura Linney plays the prosecutor. Richard Gere's the hotshot lawyer who's defending Edward Norton in his first film role. It was his breakthrough role as the altar boy accused of murdering the Catholic bishop, and to all intents and purposes he looks guilty, but Richard Gere's character his interest is piqued by the case. It appeals to his sense of, again, arrogance, to think that he could take this case on and win it and prove that he was innocent or establish reasonable doubt. And Laura Linney, obviously, formerly her character in a relationship with Richard Gere, formerly in the film, which is always the way, isn't it? they've always got something going on there. So there's a fair amount of sexual chemistry going on there. Richard Gere's character is called Martin Vale. Laura Linney's character is Janet Venable. And that's the kind of the protagonist and the antagonist going back and forth. Politics are thrown into the mix as well. It's a great watch. I think it is a great watch. And as I think you pointed out to me in a previous conversation, Chris, the judge always seems to have a glass of what appears to be whiskey in her hand. I think it could be iced tea myself.
No, Brian. She's drinking it out of this tumbler, and it is like the way she's drinking it as well. That's not how you drink iced tea. And but what I don't. They talk about this, like the whole sexualization of alcohol in film and TV. The idea that, you know, they'll sit there and they'll sip, and it will just look kind of really, really cool. She's drinking in between the case. It's not like, oh, she's finished for the day. They're like having a break, a recess to like figure out some of the documents or something, and she just goes to, she just takes a swig, and you're like, wow. And it's not even like anyone's kind of gone, oh right, like, you know, that she's really stern. There was no need for it, but she just did it. And the only like conclusion I came to was it was the 90s, you know, and that's just what they did.
Yeah, it could be that. It could also be that it was written into her contract that she that she had a glass of whiskey in her hand all the time. But I didn't notice it until you mentioned it, though. When I watched it, I thought, yeah, you're right. She, even when they were in recess in chambers, you know, as you just said, she had a glass of whiskey in her hand.
Had to do it. And I just thought, do you know what? More power to you. Go for it.
Why not? Yeah, definitely. But a very intelligent, well-paced film. And as I say, full of actors that I really like: Richard Gere, Laura Linney, Edward Norton. And there are moments of humour there. You know, coming back to the arrogance of Martin Vale, where she turns to him, they're arguing, they're bickering about the finer details of the case in a bar afterwards, and he raised the Fifth Amendment in order not to plea enter a defence. And she said to him, that Fifth Amendment plea you raised there, it was brilliant. And he comes back and he says, yeah, it was good, wasn't it? Do you know, there's that kind of, yeah, I'm cocky, but, you know, I'm not that serious about it. What did you think of it?
I really enjoyed it. This is my kind of film because it's what I would call pre-mobile phone usage, even though they do have mobiles, but it's not the way that it is now. It's where, you know, serious dramas can happen. And what I thought was great about it was exactly what we're talking there about, this kind of character where he is on the borderline of being cocky and arrogant, because there's a bit where him and his like legal help, who I think did used to be a cop, to be fair, they go and chase one of the people involved in the case. Yeah. Like they search him down and you know, this is like this high paid hotshot lawyer, and he's like manhandling this guy in some kind of crack den. Only in the 90s would this be okay.
Hands-on. I don't mind getting my hands dirty,
but no, I did like it. And I think it's because it blends like multiple genres really well. You've got the kind of murder action-y stuff, you've got the obviously the courtroom stuff, but you do have this sense of comedy, you have this sense of he's trying to figure out the case, but he's doing so in his kind of way that creates a lot of friction with everybody else. And obviously seeing Laura Linney's character's reaction all the time is great. Like she knows that he's going to try whatever he can to pull the rug from under them. And Ed Norton, obviously, definitely don't want to give away spoilers, but what a great performance when it's you amazing, think about it. When you think about it afterwards, you go, oh, what a great performance.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
And sad, it's got John Mahoney in as well, who plays the chief of police, I think, and he's really good.
A nice cameo from Frances McDormand as well.
Yeah, she rocked up, and I was like, everyone's in this. You know, it was just great. I really enjoyed it, and it's got that feel of a film that, even though it is now, you know, coming up 30 years old, still holds up.
It doesn't feel that old though to me. You know, I mean, Edward Norton's first film, that was the first film that was released, the first film he actually made, the first film he starred in. And wasn't he good in it as well, Edward Norton?
Yeah, so
he was absolutely brilliant. He was spot on it. And at times, I almost felt that I sensed that Richard Gere was actually quite shocked by the power of Norton's performance, because the scenes they have one-to-one are actually quite intense. And at one point, I thought Gere actually flinched when Edward Norton's character, Aaron, came at him. He almost sort of jumped. Oh, you know, almost felt that. And that's where they kind of almost got a script, because he almost wasn't expecting it. But they captured what was an authentic reaction, I guess. So you got all that going on as well. So it's a great. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thanks for getting it on the list of for our nostalgia pick. And it's available currently. It was when I watched it on Netflix. So yeah, anyone can have a watch of that. And yeah, please send us your thoughts if you've seen Primal Fear, Richard Gere. Cockney rhyming slang pick of the month, and any of the other films that we've reviewed in this episode. If you want to be involved with Film Podcast, now go to ukfilmreview.co.uk/podcast, and there's a big old section. Mine, Brian's mugs are on there. We've got a big section about the podcast, and there's a button that says send your review. You can click send your review. I'll be updating the site to make sure we've got the list of films that we're going to watch. We may not always know the films, because Brian gets sent some screeners, but also he goes to the cinema, bless him, and watches these, so it can be what's available and what he's able to get to.
I think I'll be watching loads of films with numbers in next month, because there's John Wick 4 and there's Deadpool 3.
Oh,
so that will definitely be there.
Okay, well, there you go, guys. You know, and girls and folks and everyone in between, those will be on potentially on the list. And we will also update on the streaming release and the nostalgia pick and a couple of the indie films that we're going to review.
And I will also remember to review the indie features next time.
Well, at least I had you covered, you know. And between the two of us, we got everything. It would have been more awkward if we both went, nah, I didn't watch it.
Yeah, I know. We kind of work as a team, don't we? A bit of a tag team, you know. Yeah. Your strength, my weakness, and vice versa and all that. But I will promise not to forget next time to remember. Don't forget to remember. Oh,
don't
you know
forget
that.
To remember, yeah. You are forgiven.
Thank you.
Bless you. And so that's it for this episode. Please do check out the website /podcast so that you can get involved if you want to. Also, if you're a filmmaker and you want us to review your film in the indie section, probably best just to tweet me, which is @UKFilmReview or @Chris_Olsen, which was not the best username. I appreciate
_Olsen. Are you sure?
Yeah. If Chris Olsen with just one _ is listening, give it up. Give it up now.
Let him have it. Let this Chris have it.
How dare you?
Quite cool having 2 underscores, though. I mean, I've only got 1 underscore in my email address.
Yeah, well, I went double. I doubled up. And I've felt better ever since. Yeah. But yeah, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you everyone who submit films, or to the PR people who gave us access to films, and to no one who sent any drinks or snacks. Me and Brian are waiting heavily to be endorsed. Starving. You know, we want endorsement, we want snacks. Yeah. So if you have some of those, send them, please.
Yeah.
And until next time, we'll see you again.
Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.